Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
In this AusCert presentation, iDefence's Kimberly Zenz talks about Russian cybercrime. Zenz is iDefence's Russia analyst. She speaks multiple languages and routinely travels into interesting places all around the world in an effort to understand the who and the why behind cyber attacks. She's an expert on the Russian business network and Russian cyber fraud in general. Enjoy.
But in a lot of places, they lack the capacity, just in terms of they don't have the numbers of people. Once they get over to the issue of prosecution, there's not prosecutors and judges who are properly trained to deal with it. Contributing to on the cybercrime sector, illegal side, a lot of the intelligence services do train people, and then they leave. They go into the private sector. They end up working for companies or strike out on their own, and they can be another source of trained criminals. And then corruption. The lower-level guys, they kind of stay away from it, but as they get larger, they'll tie into the mafiosi groups, and they start buying their protection, and it becomes very difficult to prosecute or cause any evasions. There are efforts within Russia to change this, but they actually focus mostly on censorship. They've passed several laws regarding the ability to close extremist sites. When it comes to trying to get legislative changes regarding to cybercrime or cooperation on the international level, it's really quite difficult. They're somewhat reluctant to do this. In terms of financially motivated crime, the main issue is foreign targets versus domestic. Traditionally, the most targets for cyber criminals in Russia are foreign. This goes back to the issues of capacity and priorities for law enforcement. It's just not an issue for them. Even the ones that are really truly dedicated and really truly committed, if they only have so much amount of time, they're going to focus on the issues that hurt their people. Plus, it's not really viewed as that big a deal when it's focusing on foreign targets. The Ministry of Internal Affairs actually said in a public press release, our hackers are the best in the world. He seems kind of proud of them. I was actually speaking to a Russian friend of mine 2 days ago about this, and he was like, good, let them fear us. Let them fear our rockets and let them fear us online. And he's actually a pretty mellow guy. I was pretty surprised to hear he felt that way, but he did. It's also really just, it has its roots. There's a lot of sociological studies, and they have these roots in kind of illegal economic activity in the Soviet Union, where it was kind of recognized that you had to break some of the laws to function properly, and that's sort of carrying over now. That's part of it. Part of it is when people do get arrested, the sentences are extremely harsh, so you almost don't think the punishment fits the crime, and you feel sorry for them. You don't want to see them get caught. You view the law enforcement as the bad guys. But the end result is you get some pretty blatant activity. The one on the bottom, those are supposed to be two hackers surrounded by some lovely ladies. That's from a magazine that puts out three hard copy every month. One is dedicated to hardware, one is kind of low level, one is high level. Microsoft advertises in it, Cisco, I've seen ads in there for them, I've seen ads for Oracle in there. But they'll have articles like how to exploit World of Warcraft for profit. It's just pretty acceptable. They had a swap meet. I spent the first 3 months of this year in Russia, and they had a swap meet, and you could go down, and you could either bring hardware, software, manuals, or alcohol, and go down and meet up and trade. And they have a publicist. They're really very, and they also kind of think, it's almost like they're almost, I don't want to say the word, but lovable scamps, the guys who do this. Robbing a bank with a gun is bad, but somehow this is more acceptable. And the one on the top, that's actually a joke poster. It's an old Soviet propaganda poster, and they've changed it in Russian. It just says, we're automating the systems of payment, and they think that's funny, and they pass it to each other. In terms of financial fraud, I'm sure I don't have to tell you guys about phishing and the use of banking trojans. That's really huge there. It's a major source. There are also a lot of malicious code authors coming out of there. And I'll talk a bit later about how that market's set up. But you also see pump and dump scams. And standard pump and dump scams in terms of spam, that's not so interesting, but you're starting to see a few kind of creative ones. I've seen reverse ones where they sent out spam claiming spoofing that it looks like it comes from one of the largest companies in Russia for oil and gas exploration. And they said that they're being persecuted for tax fraud, sort of like Yukos, what happened to them, which is a very large Russian, it was the biggest company or the second biggest company in Russia, headed by the wealthiest man in Russia, and it's just shut down by the government. And that their trading would be suspended the next day. And they timed it so in America, everyone's still working, but in Russia, they've all gone to bed, and it was a holiday the next day, so no one was answering their phone. And then they ran a DDoS attack against their website, which took it down, so if you tried to go check, you know, and the idea was you're supposed to panic, sell your stock, and they'd sold short, so they would make money that way. Identity theft, that's actually more of an issue in Russia. It's really growing. The problem there is there's no real information available for people legally and commercially. There's a few credit rating agencies, but they're pretty expensive and they don't have comprehensive records. There's so much available online, literally millions and millions of people. There's now even one website that puts it all in one place for you. And I've got no bank in Russia has ever told me that they buy them, but like the press in Russia seems to think that the banks use these like as their own credit rating services. So they're very widespread and they're very acceptable. And then carding, Russians are like pretty active in that. But again, I'll talk about the market a bit more later. Another issue that's very big in Russian Federation is botnets. Some of the largest in the world come out of Russia. Yes, the major use for them is spam. They've hooked up with the spam gangs, which are probably the best organized in Russia. They're the oldest and the most coordinated. They've been operating the longest. And they've, as spam, like selling Rolexes and stuff, has sort of faded as the main source of profitability for them. They've done very well, good job of hooking up with other organizations or other people to kind of market their services. So you'll see them, you know, delivering, you know, you'll hook up with a spam gang, which in return may be renting botnets. They're not even opening their own botnets to send your malware or your phishing accounts for them. Within Russia, though, the DDoS attacks are getting really interesting. And some of it's defensive. You'll see cases like Stormworm's a very famous case. Someone was actually talking about that a little earlier today, where they would actually DDoS people who investigated them. But and then there's a traditional give me money or I'll take down your site that usually targets kind of fringe companies. They're legal, but they'll be like casinos or pornographers, people that are more likely to just pay and not want to attract any attention themselves. But then within Russia, you're starting to see this thing called like the anti-competitive DDoS attack, which is people will rent botnets to take down their competitors' websites. And that's actually kind of interesting that this is really going. They'll even come in conjunction with black PR. Again, they'll hook up with spam. They'll send spoofed emails. Oh, we are going out of business because we are being investigated for fraud. And then you go to their site and it's down. And it's hard for companies to recover from that. And then the most interesting thing you'll see is they're going after Russian targets. This is really just this year. There's been some really high-profile Russian sites, most of them related to IT in one way or the other, but not all of them, that have been the target of DDoS attacks. And the ones that are willing to talk about it, they say they've never gotten an extortion request in advance. They just were attacked. And they just think they've been attacked because they were high profile. So like one theory, maybe, you know, it's almost like a resume builder. Like, you know, I took down Habar Habar, I took down Dirty.ru, you should hire me. Or maybe it's just back to the old school, like, I just want to do it for recognition. It's really kind of interesting. There's actually another one going on right now against a gaming site there. And they're really quite a big deal within Russia. Political motivated attacks, these are going up. Really in Russia, it's mostly financially related crime. But these are going up. The most famous case is Estonia, which I'll talk about a little just because people keep asking me about it. But the important part to mention about Estonia was not the scale of the attacks. They were able to really impact that country's ability to function for a couple hours at least, particularly financial infrastructure. But it was almost like the perfect storm. Estonia is a pretty small country. It's a very wired country. Like in America, if I couldn't use my bank for a reason, I would just write a check. Or maybe I would go into the bank office if the ATM didn't work. That's not a lot of option for many people there. It's incredibly wired. They just don't have those relationships beyond the electronic one. And then also, the Russians are really upset. And it goes back, that's like a whole other lecture, just Baltics and Russian tensions. But it has to do with World War II. And World War II is an incredibly important issue for Russians. They still have a parade every year. A friend of mine, until I guessed his PIN code, it was the day of victory, which is the day the Soviets surrendered to the Nazis surrendered to the Soviets. Like that was the most important date to his heart, so he had that on his ATM. And also there's been some issues within the Baltics. They've had a couple marches of like SS veterans and things like that. A guy was arrested in Riga for killing an SS officer in like 1942. Things like that, it's caused real upsetment in Russia. Now, the people in the Baltics had their own justifiable complaints. Both sides were behaved pretty badly, but they were really touching an extremely sensitive nerve. And that's sort of what sparked it. It's not something that can be really reproduced over and over and over, because you'd have to upset them that much over and over and over, and you'd have to have a target as susceptible. Now, if you have something as to compare to, like, in China right now, Carrefour has sort of been singled out within China as supporting Tibet, and so it's kind of making them a target. So if you're a company, it's theoretically possible that Russians could target you and you'd be in danger. But really, in terms of countries, I hear another Estonia over and over again, but the chances of that happening are pretty low. And that's actually a poster from one of the defacements during the attacks on Estonia, and it just says Day of Victory, which is the day of the Soviet victory over the Nazis, up across the top. And then it says, Grandpa's victory is my victory. And there's people feeling very, very strongly connected to that. And I actually have people who've admitted to me that they've been involved in this, that they don't think they've done anything wrong, and they've never done anything illegal otherwise. They think they're, like, very law-abiding people, and they're security, they're in the security industry, but they're on the honest side, and they participated because they just viewed that's what you have to do. And even the Russian government was very obstructionist when it comes to trying to investigate them, because they didn't really think it was a big deal either. They thought it was good that people were doing these. This actually ties into some of the other political attacks. Like, within the caucuses, they had an attack. There's a pretty objectionable website called KavkazCenter.ru. Well, it's changed its domains a lot, but it's a Chechen site. And there was, within the caucuses, there was a localized DDoS attack on them. And the local branch of the FSB issued a statement basically saying, we know who did it, and they're patriotic people looking out for their country. So they're kind of okay with it. There's also been other attacks within the caucuses on human rights sites. Sometimes you can kind of almost pin it on the government, like the ISPs will block it, or they'll redirect it to a pornography site or something like that. Sometimes there's no attribution proven. A lot of times this timing is sensitive. Like, one of them had, it was actually hacked, and like they had a lot of their information stolen off their servers, and then they had a DDoS attack right before they're about to publish a very sensitive poll right before the elections regarding who was going to vote and who was going to vote for what. You also see smaller level DDoS attacks related to the issue of Kosovo against Albanian targets, US targets, EU targets. But it hasn't made the press like Estonia, because it's not as many people are angry and as active in that they were over Estonia. Also, within the country itself, there's been a slow increase. I've seen a couple cases this year going after media targets that aren't related just to the caucuses. They've had DDoS attacks in the past on a couple, like Kommersant, which is it's like one of the last remaining, like, very respected but still pretty oppositionist newspaper, and Echo Moskvy, which is the Echo of Russia. It's a similar radio station. But, like, even in recent months, Kompromat.ru, which is, it's kind of like a muckraking site, but it publishes accusations of corruption. First, they were blocked by several ISPs, but only ISPs that were either directly government-owned, partially government-owned, or the people who owned them had ties to the government. And then after they made a huge stink about that, and they got most of the blocks removed after about 2 weeks, because it is actually technically illegal to do that, they had a DDoS attack. Or Kommersant, the same newspaper, published an article criticizing, it's a pro-Kremlin group, although not officially affiliated with them, called Nashi, and they said that they were kind of, like, no longer useful and they were on their way out. Then they had their own DDoS attack. So you're starting to see those as well. And that ties into the new laws on extremism, why DDoS attack them if you can just take them down. Defacements you see less of, but they're still around. And then the government involvement goes back to just, it's not really that big a deal. And in some cases, it's perceived as a good thing. And that goes back again into the issue of, like, it's not about following the rule of law. It's about, in this particular case, do I find this is a problem? Do I not find this to be a problem? Which ties into law enforcement, too, because people don't see it's that big a deal. The industry itself is actually getting really interesting within Russia. And this is the malicious code, other type of services for hire. It's really starting to specialize. They'll have bulletproof hosting services, but when, even like a year ago, they'd have something like Russian Business Network, where it was very centralized, and it was very, you know, and that was mostly in Russia. Now the predominant trend is to start selling servers in many different countries that are part of a larger ISP, which itself becomes difficult when it comes to investigations, because now, even if you're able to identify who it is and where it is, now you need to deal with the Malaysian ISP, the Malaysian government, the Russian government, the government of the country that the victim was, the victim itself. It's just a whole other level of investigation. It's also a lot harder to block. If you know, like, there's a wholly criminal ISP, you can just add their net block to your blacklist, and that's it. In this case, if it's a mostly legitimate ISP with a ever-frequently shifting number of illegal customers, how do you block that? Particularly, what if it's a pretty large one and you don't want to lose your own customers? That's much more difficult to address. And then it's easier for the criminals to hide their tracks. You may identify activity in Malaysia, but you may not connect activity in Turkey to the same person. Within the financial services, you'll find brokers that they almost sell almost anything. Their job is not, they don't actually write malicious code. They don't actually buy credit card numbers. They're there to facilitate the deal. those are actually often like on some of the more scarier forums. Malicious code, they'll write it, of course. They'll write, if you need something specific, they'll do it. They'll just write their own Trojans and sell it. There's also even been a case of Brazilian groups selling their malicious code, but having a Russian broker sell it on because it's kind of like the Russian brand name and that's where the market is. So they're tying into it. If they tried to advertise on Brazilian forums, they'd never get any customers. And you'll also see cases like, you know, passing on, like you'll see like Iranians talking, like they don't even know what they want yet. They'll just be like, we should buy a Russian Trojan because it does have a brand name. Same thing, botnets for rent. That's a really big issue within Russia. Different things you can use them for. Financial and other credentials, that goes into there's just really no control over there, like over the information within Russia itself. And then some of the other stuff, they'll offer what looks like, you know, credit reports, information on people. They'll, and then the credit ratings is actually people there that will vouch. Like, let's say you wanted to buy a batch of credit card numbers. They're a third party in the sale that will verify previous sales records of that seller, that their other customers were satisfied. They will verify those numbers are real. They will verify that they're still operational. They'll verify they have the balances that seller says they do. And if you're not able, like if they're not able at the end to take advantage of them like you've been promised, they'll guarantee your transaction. So they're kind of like a third-party broker. All of that, too, I mean, they're starting to see it very specialized, like by language, by region, by, you know, would you need someone with a German speaking, with an Austrian accent? Do you need something, you know, things like that? Do you need something written in a certain way, in a certain language? Those are all offered. Over a year ago, actually, I was asked if I would help, because I have, like, an Austrian accent when I speak German, with one of the groups was trying to hire people, and I said I'd do it, but then VeriSign said no. But this was like a year and a half ago. They were looking for, then it wasn't brokers. Then it wasn't like we have language speakers. Then it was actually one specific group that wanted people to exploit accounts, some of their higher value accounts, and they were specifically recruiting. And that's kind of changed. Now they're offering services for this, so they wouldn't need me. A big issue too is financial on the money laundering side. I mean, I've heard some people talking this conference about this as a way of maybe attracting, you know, attacking cybercrime, making it more difficult to transfer funds, making that sort of like maybe monitoring that as a way of identifying criminal activity. That'll probably work in a lot of countries, but I'm not sure if that would work in Russia. And that there's a couple reasons for that. One is there are a lot of banking intermediaries. There are services. The Russian slang word is just drop, and that means anyone who helps within the money laundering chain. And that can be even you need someone who looks innocent to pick up the money for you at Western Union. You need someone to set up accounts for you. And these are specialized organizations that just do that. They also have the electronic payment services. And the problem with these is there's very many of them. It's not just eGold or WebMoney. Like there's Yandex, which is one of the larger search engines in Russia that has them. I've seen QQ used, which is actually a Chinese one. There's like a Ukrainian one. And then there's a lot of smaller ones that are created specifically for criminal organizations or criminals to use. Like anyone can join them, but you have to be vouched for to be able to get the full access of their services. You have to spend like route at least $10,000 a month for them to get them. And some of them even have offices, like you can go to Moscow particularly, and they have like three convenient locations by metro stations. And but like the problem with those is they're used by a lot of other people. Like when I worked out in the Russian Far East, there's no ATM machine in my city. 250,000 people, and if I wanted to take money out of my ATM card, I had to go to the one bank that would allow me to take it as a cash advance on a Visa. Because it's a Visa connected to my ATM card. That was the only way to get it, and I had to wait in the line with all the people who would come to get their cash pensions. If you want to pay, like in, you know, back in the U.S. again, if I could pay my bill, like my phone bill, I can either write a check and mail it in or I can pay online. There's not a lot of banks. Slowly it's increasing, but it's not a lot of banks that offer these online services, and there's no checks. You have to either go by yourself down to the phone company, or you can pay at a local kiosk where it all becomes very anonymous again. There's just kiosks all over town. So about a month ago, they had a roundtable, which is a precursor to any legislation, to discuss requiring some sort of proof of identification when using these things, and they had to back off. They had to back off almost instantly and say, no, we're not going to do it. They were interested mostly for taxes, you know, to be able to track it. But they had real companies that offer payment services to other real companies raise basically a huge fuss over this, because if you're requiring a passport or some sort of ID, then you basically have to go down and it defeats the entire purpose of the convenience. And you can shop online this way. There are monasteries that take donations this way. Like, it's not just about the cyber criminal. So it's not really policed. It's not really watched. There's even within Russian law, you can register as like a financial organization of type B, which means you're not a bank. You just do this. It's pretty easy to do, and it's really hard to get involved with. The only thing I actually think is positive about all this is as the market kind of starts growing within Russia, you see a larger amount of instances of attack on Russian targets. And what that is it's mostly lower-level script kiddie stuff. It's as the banks start offering online banking. The first one to offer it was Alpha Bank, and they had a phishing attack like a couple months shortly thereafter. But some of the other ones have it. They're starting to have more attacks in Russia, and they actually publicize them. They do put them in the press. That's another thing I've heard talked here about a deterrent is maybe if you publicized it, you know, people would see it and be more afraid to do it. And they will publicize these attacks. It would tend to be like, he costs $750 worth of damages or, you know, things like that. But it is happening, and my hope is that as this spreads, as it becomes more of an issue in Russia, it's going to become more of a priority within Russia as well for law enforcement. They'll build capacity. Local police will get more involved in using it. People are going to view it as kind of bad as opposed to now, and it's mostly okay. And but other like shortly of that, the problem is the way the market's structured, and even as it becomes more specialized and more underground, that it's going to be more, as measures are taken against, it's just going to be more difficult to investigate or prosecute. That's the quick version. You asked me to be quick. I did the quick version. Thank you.